Hey everyone, welcome to the new podcast series here at Your Enneagram Coach, the podcast. And I am so thrilled to share with you a new opportunity that we have for moms. Yes, moms, listen up. Have you ever had a longing for deeper connections with moms who truly understand your mom journey? Or do you crave a supportive community where you can be really authentic and true to yourself without the fear of judgment? Well, if that's you, then I have the perfect solution that you've been looking for, and that's Enneagram for Moms Cohorts. Yes, you heard it. Enneagram for Moms Cohorts. So just imagine joining a group of other moms who share your same Enneagram type. They're all coming together for 8 weeks, and we're going to have meaningful conversations. You're going to experience support and growth all together. So we've designed these cohorts to create lasting friendships with other moms who can truly understand you, your struggles, your desires, your aspirations as a mom. Now, we're going to have a certified Enneagram parenting coach lead these cohorts, and I'm going to lead the ones during the daytime, which I'm so excited to do, and we'll have some in the evening as well. And this is going to provide a safe and nurturing place for you to explore your personality, the challenges you have, the strengths you offer your family. And so there's so much in this opportunity. So what we're going to do in these cohorts is we're going to use our curated guide sheets that are just for your type about being a mom. So we have made these to bring awareness to your own journey and path of growth so that you can gain real understanding of what it's like to be your Enneagram type as a parent. But not only that, it's to help also foster really good conversations with the other moms in your cohort. So that way your guys aren't just like, what are we going to talk about, right? So we will bring up the topics at hand. You'll get to learn and explore more about your Enneagram type, why you do what you do, but then use that as a springboard to conversation. But not only that, each cohort is going to have their own private Facebook group community. Yes, this is where you're going to continue building those relationships and having further discussions throughout the week. So you're not going to want to miss out on joining one of the cohorts that fits you best, because you're going to have deep friendships with other moms who get you. Not only that, they're going to support you and understand you. Okay, so the cohort's registration opens May 6th to May 13th. Perfect timing as a Mother's Day gift, whether for yourself, your spouse, your friend, your own mom, maybe your daughter, anyone that you know is an Enneagram enthusiast and would love to participate in something like this. But also, there are only 25 spots for each cohort, and there's one for each type in the daytime and in the evening. So you're not going to want to miss out. Definitely get in and register right now at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. Now, these cohorts start on June 10th. So when you register, you're also going to get some extra fun little goodies like the Parenting Enneagram Strengths and Weaknesses Cheat Sheet. Also, the parenting guide in understanding the 9 types of children. I'm also going to give you what's a journaling guide on AWARE. It's an acronym that we're going to use throughout our 8 weeks, but also a parent's guide to apologizing. Yes, how do I apologize in a way that is most effective? Well, you're going to get it. So again, it's Mother's Day coming up, so don't miss out on getting this for yourself and someone else. We are so excited for you to join one of these communities so that you can really feel understood, known, and validated. So join your cohort today at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. Okay, so you're probably wondering, well, what is this going to be like before I sign up? I mean, like, what's the experience like? Well, I've got good news, because today and the following 8 episodes I'm going to show you what these cohorts are like with a mini cohort. So today and the other 8 episodes, they're going to be 3 moms of each type for whatever episode it's for, to show you what a cohort is like. So today I have 3 type 9 moms. Well, actually 4, because I'm a type 9 too. And we're going to talk about the strengths and the struggles that type 9 moms encounter. You're going to experience this really rich, supportive conversation between these moms. And so you're going to really hear what the cohorts are like and how each of the cohorts are going to help bless each mom with validation, understanding, a non-judgmental space, no shame, and a place to just really be your authentic self. So again, don't miss out. Grab your spot in the cohort that fits you best at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. Now, let me introduce you to the 3 type 9 moms who will dive into this mini cohort experience, and I can't wait for you to meet them and experience what it's like for other moms that are very similar, but also have their own experiences, to come together and to talk. So let me bring them on right now. All right. Hey, friends, I am so excited to have the 3 of you here so we can talk about what it's like being a type 9 mom. And I'm one too, so this is going to be super fun for me. I get to jump into saying, yes, that's me. And like, I totally get you. But before we dive in, I just want you to introduce yourself so that we get to know each other a little bit better. And then if you can say, like, you know, who you're married to, where you're from, and then your kiddos, like their ages, you know, what stage of life are you in, all that kind of good stuff. So let's start there. So who would like to go first?
I will go first.
Oh, see, that's why I'm volunteer, because I'm talking for
somebody. Somebody needs to do it. I'm Kristen Wunsch, and I'm married to Carl. We've been married for 21 years, and we live in Surprise, Arizona, which is in the Phoenix metro area. And we have 3 kids. Our oldest son is 11, second son is 8, and we have a daughter who is 4.
Wow, that's awesome. All right. Well, I'll pick so that you guys don't, you know, because I told them, I was like, okay, so let's be assertive. And you guys are being awesomely assertive. So Mandy, why don't you go?
Sure. I'm Mandy Mitchell. I'm married to Andy, and we live in Normal, Illinois. And I have 3 kids. Simon is 16, Sylvia is almost 13, and Miriam is 10. And was there anything else, Beth, that you wanted?
Well, we've known each other for like 15 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's been maybe even longer than that. So this is really fun to have you on, because we've just kind of walked this journey of being type 9 moms for many years. And so I'm just excited to continue to carry on that conversation with you here today. Okay, Amanda, what about you?
Hey, I'm Amanda White from Athens, Georgia. I'm married to Alex. We've been married 18 years this summer. We have a 14-year-old son, a 12-year-old daughter, and a 10-year-old son as well.
That's awesome. And you're one of our certified Enneagram coaches, correct?
I am.
Yay. I love that. So this is just going to be a really fun conversation about just being us type 9s. So what I want to do first is to give us kind of an overview of what it's like to be a type 9 mom. One, not that you don't know, because you do, as in your experience, but also for those that are listening, to get a real sense of what it's like to be a type 9 mom, our strengths and our struggles. And then once I'm done just kind of reading through this, I'd love to just open it up for conversation between us. I'll lead us with some questions to make sure, you know, we touch on certain points. But I can't wait actually to just have this conversation together. So let me give this overview of type 9 moms. So understanding your experience as a type 9 mom begins with recognizing how your core motivations influence your parenting journey. So your fear of conflict, right? We all like fear conflict and tension. Is really paramount to how we parent. And we just desire this inner peace and stability for ourselves and those that we're around. But sometimes it leads us to prioritize managing and maintaining that harmony at the expense of expressing our own needs and desires. So essentially, we, you know, acknowledge that everyone else has needs and they have agendas, and we just want to go along to get along, accommodate. Hopefully, if we do that, then everyone's going to be happy and fine, and it's just going to be amazing, right? But we struggle with losing a sense of ourselves. So the sloth that the nine has, it's not a physical laziness, because you know and I know that we are super busy people. It is a not knowing ourselves so that we can maintain this peace by over accommodating. And when we do that, the thing that kind of comes up time and time again for us is this sense of, does my presence matter? Do people see me? Am I known? Like, do I have any importance here? Or is it just about me accommodating to other people's needs? Now, so those are some of the core motivations that are underlying just our common type nine mom parenting. Now, our primary parenting perspective is that we're warm, we're kind, we're focusing on nurturing relationships, and of course, fostering that peace and harmony. So when we're with our family unit, what we're going to see the most is this sense of feeling. We have a sense, a sixth sense of feeling, intuition of how things are going. Are people okay? Are they happy? Are they sad? Are they frustrated? Are they whining? And how do I accommodate to them to maintain this peace and harmony? But the problem is our fixation on that leads us to suppress our feelings, our opinions, our needs, our thoughts, and then even expressing them in the truest form. And in fact, a lot of times we don't even know what they are. I know for me, when I started learning the Enneagram, when someone would ask me like, well, so what do you want? I mean, I was like a deer in headlights, like, I don't think I've ever really thought about this. You know, I'm so fixated on other people. Now, when we're parenting in autopilot, now this is really interesting. When we're on autopilot, we're unconsciously, and in a good way, and sometimes not a good way, guiding our children to become mini versions of ourselves. So what we're doing as type nine moms is we're emphasizing traits like calmness, gentleness, and empathy. Now, again, these are amazing qualities that all people should instill. But what happens in autopilot mode is we are basically trying to create a mini version of a type nine, and sometimes not even recognizing that our children might be a completely different Enneagram type with different qualities and assets, and becoming little peaceful accommodators might not be where they're headed. So especially like a type eight child, you know, they might be in a different trajectory. Now, learning those qualities, will that benefit them? Absolutely. But oftentimes we're really just trying to force them into being little versions of ourselves. At least I know I have. Now, our communication style as we're parenting can kind of meander. Sometimes we're having a hard time figuring out what we want to say or how we want to land the plane because we're really just not wanting any tension. So, okay, how can I word this? How can I say this in a way that will, you know, make everyone happy and okay, at least enough to get them from here to there. But we also often say yes when we really would like to say no, or we'll say maybe, and really that is a no. So it's hard for us to have honest communication and conversation because we intuitively know it's going to upset someone or make someone upset upset. And so we tend to not be as authentic in our conversation as we should be, or as assertive as we should be. We're not realizing it in the moment. It's not like we're trying to not be authentic. We're just really striving for that peace and harmony. Now, as we embark in growth as a type nine mom, we will see that there is great value in having healthy conflict and asserting ourselves. So this can be hard because we don't want the conflict, but when we're open and honest and have these deep connections and conversations with our family, we're going to see so much deeper connection with them. So what we have to do is prioritize ourselves. And that can feel really hard. Even just hearing that and saying that out loud as a nine, I'm like, I don't like that. But it's not that we're self-focused. It's that we do matter. And when we can cultivate a stronger sense of ourself, that our voice matters, our presence matter, we will actually show up in that same manner, being able to embrace conflicts and tensions, but guiding our kids on a path that is truly remarkable, no matter where they're going in life's storms, right? Like that we're there, we're present, we're able to endure the ups and the downs with them. Okay, so that's just an overview of a type nine parent in general. There's so much more we could touch on, but I just want to open it up real quick for just a general idea of what has it been like for you guys when you hear all of that, just as a type nine mom, just like what comes to the forefront of your mind? Like maybe some highlights, but also like what are the things that maybe others don't realize how hard it is to be a type nine mom? So who would like to start?
I can start.
Great.
So my kids are all very different. And I think I would say being a type nine mom, I have the advantage of appreciating them, like their differences and seeing the beauty in each of them. But also, like Beth was saying, I do try to make them into peaceful accommodators. I try, and it doesn't work. The one child that's very different from me is the one that is the hardest for me, because she is quick to speak and says what she thinks. So that is hard for me, because like, do you not see that maybe you shouldn't have said that, or that was hurtful? And then my son, he maybe struggles with reading the room or knowing like what's going on. I'm like, how can you not see that what's happening in this situation? And then my other child, she's more like me. And so I parent her more to try to get her to speak, like, say what you feel. What do you feel? You should know, you know, I want you to have a voice. So I parent her more to bring out her voice, because I don't want her to be like I was when I was younger and not knowing how I felt. So I do parent them, wanting them to be more like me. And I think that Beth has helped me to see that, like, I am who I am. I'm a nine. I'm a type nine mom, and that's a gift to my children. And it also has flaws. It has things that are not great that need to be redeemed, and that God is redeeming.
No, I love that. Yeah. So the type nine is able to see all perspectives easily and adjust for them, you know, and honor them. We want them to all have, you know, a place and to feel seen and that they matter. But like you said, it's true that, like, why aren't you like me? Like, why can't you be accommodating too? Or why can't you, like you said, read the room and adjust, you know, to make everyone feel safe and heard and cared for? But not everybody has those skill sets. Or like a daughter who speaks so assertively, and that can be really hard, because it's like, hey, wait, that was a little too much for this group or this room or this situation. And so those can be really big challenges for the type nine who sees, you know, the world through our own lens, and then we want to shape them. Now, again, like you said, the redeeming part of it is helping them to experience, like, hey, you know, son, here's how to read the room, like helping him to move in that direction. But then there's that point of, you know, us forcing them to be just like us. So I love how you were talking about the redeeming aspects as us being a type nine mom and seeing those strengths. Kristen and Amanda, what about you guys? What are some highs and lows in being a type nine mom?
One of the highs that I thought of was, I think that it's one of my strengths to connect with my kids and to really prioritize the connection. And I think I've learned that, you know, that's a really important thing as a parent anyway. And so sometimes I'll, you know, going into the struggles also, I'll get down on myself a little bit for like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be like just like doing, playing with you whenever you want. I don't do it whenever they want, but it feels like that sometimes. And, you know, will you sit on the couch with me? Yes, of course I will, because I have time. And then, you know, time goes by and I'm like, oh, maybe I need to get up and do something. So it is a little bit of both, but I think connecting is a good strength that I have as a parent, and each of them is important, and I like to connect with them in different ways. And I think I prioritize that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And I'm assuming, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about connecting individually. My assumption, and this would probably be true for all of you moms, is you're literally studying your kids from infancy on up, just like we kind of do with all people, if we're honest. And what are their likes? What are their preferences? How can I move towards them with who they are? So like, you know, if it's a son that loves to go fishing, we would probably, maybe we won't go like actual fish if you're not into that, though I would. But maybe we, you know, help them to get the gear or this, or if they're book readers, you know, listening to them read, or what are they enjoying? So Kristen, is that kind of like what you're talking about, is moving towards them and their own unique aspects to connect with them deeper?
Yeah, that's definitely a way that I do it. I'll pay attention to what they like, and they'll ask. One of them won't ask, but I know, you know, I'll watch them and, okay, maybe you would like this, or maybe I can ask if you want to do this. And it's always a yes with that one. And the other one, you know, will ask me, will you go play basketball with me? Yesterday he did this. Well, I'm trying to cook dinner. Okay, for 5 minutes, we'll go play basketball for 5 minutes, and then I'll go back to dinner. And, you know, the little one is really fun, but she really loves to connect too. And well, she's the one that's still in the snuggling. And will you watch a movie with me? I'm like, yes, or how about something shorter? And then we'll get back to it. So it's a little bit of both, but I think I do try to pay attention to what they want and what they're interested in. And that is why it's the connection, and it's meeting them where they're at and not just trying to drag them along with what I want to do.
And so what I'm hearing from you is that you're desiring to communicate to each of the kids, I see you and you matter, and I'm going to show you that you matter by moving towards you when you ask for my connection. Would that be kind of a way of saying it?
Great way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, but as a type 9 mom myself, I totally know what you're talking about. And I can hear that hesitancy in your voice. Like, they've asked me to connect with them, which is like exactly what I want, but I'm cooking dinner. And how do I do both? And so it sounds like in that moment, there's tension within you. And how does that usually go? Because it sounds like, oh, I'm going to go and accommodate, whether for good reasons, not good reasons, I'm going to accommodate and actually connect with them and then come back to said thing, you know, chore, cooking the dinner, whatever. But there probably are times that you really have to say no. And has that been hard? And how do you navigate that?
Yes, of course, I do have to say no sometimes. And of course, with me, I'm like, not right now, you know. or, you know, how about we do this at this time? And, you know, but it just depends on what it is. I'm sure there's things where I've had to say no. Well, there is actually. My 4-year-old wants another pet, and we're not getting another pet. So I'm sure you guys can remember those days, or maybe they still happen as the kids get older. But she really wants one, and she has all these ideas, and she's going to take care of it, and she's trying to convince me. And, you know, no, I know that you really want one, but no, we're not doing that. And that's an easy one because, you know, I have my parental perspective and just our limits and things, and we've got a dog. We're happy with the dog.
Yes. Yes. It is so easy for us nines to say, or to put our foot down or say no, or be more assertive on things we absolutely don't want. We nines know what they don't want versus really what we want. So like, if you know, I don't want another pet, because I know how much work that is, it's much easier for us to say, no, we're not going to do that, you know, and to kind of just let that be what it is. It's in the gray that we get more accommodating, because it's like, well, okay, I can kind of see. And it's hard for us to say no, because, well, what if that upsets them, creates tension, conflict, all the things that happen with that. Amanda, tell us about you and your ups and downs and being a type 9 mom.
Well, I would say being easygoing is definitely my strength, and being calm, of course. And my husband's a 7. And up until I really understood the Enneagram, I thought I might be lazy. He wants to go. And if he's got a day off, he wants to go do something out of the house. If we're sitting around on the couch, he's like, all right, we need to go do something. Let's go do yard work. And I'm like, oh, not me and the kids are like, oh, you know. And so after learning about the Enneagram, it's like, oh, he's different in that he doesn't feel good. And he's, unless he's moving and busy and always has the next thing planned and looking forward. And he's just different than us. My oldest is a 9. We were very similar and very easy to parent. But I have learned that I feel like I very much dampened his emotions growing up, you know, because I wasn't comfortable with sadness. So I would talk him out of being sad, or got bullied on the bus and I say like, oh, that kid must have problems at home. He didn't mean it, you know, and I call the teacher immediately and said, better not have it again. Yeah. And just trying to, you know, prevent any sad feelings was what I was doing for a really long time. And now I feel that I've caused a problem with him expressing his emotions and having it. He says he doesn't have emotions. And I'm like, you have them. We've got to find them. So I can, you know, break out the feelings wheel at dinner and tell me about a time you were, you know, this week when you felt embarrassed, you know, and I'm trying to like make conversation around feelings happen a lot more, because I just was, I'm just uncomfortable with the sads and the angry feelings. And so, I've learned and gotten better about that. And that's good. But by the time you're 14, you've kind of gotten into the habit of like shutting down, or fixing those feelings. And so I don't like that happened. My youngest, who's 10, he does not have a problem with feelings of sad and angry. and that's hard for me to cope with him and letting him feel those. He loves to do things like Rubik's Cubes and will cry for hours trying to solve it. Will not give up, but will cry. And I can't help him because I don't know how to do a Rubik's Cube. And I have to leave the house. I cannot be in the room. My husband's like, oh, I think it's funny. Look at him. He's great. And I'm like, I'm really glad he's persevering, but I can't be in the room while he's so upset about it. And so that is a harder dynamic for me with him. And he's very much into sports and has to be the best at everything. And if he's not, it is a really big emotional deal that I was not picked to be on the starting lineup, and they don't understand. And it's not, and I'm like, well, maybe you're not. And I want to say very kindly, like, maybe you're not starting lineup material yet. You're the younger thing. And he will not hear it. He does not believe it, you know, and it takes a long time for him to calm down. And then he'll finally be like, okay, reality sets in. But for hours, you know, it's me trying to like, okay, it doesn't matter if you're the number one on the team. We love you for trying so hard, you know, and kind of giving this positive reinforcement for his perseverance and just really trying. But yeah, so I think I struggled definitely with the emotions in the house. And my daughter, who's my middle child, is the sweetest, generous, kindest girl, and is always doing favors and all that. And so then I feel like double time having to be kind and go above and beyond loving her back, because she's tried to love me so hard. And she loves to bake. She makes the biggest mess baking, and she just won't know how to clean up after herself. And so I'm trying to make dinner. I'm going to make cookies. And I'm kind of like, but I'm making dinner. This is going to get in my way. This is going to make a mess. But I don't want to say no, because she's just so sweet. And so I'm like, can you wait till after I'm done? Can you be sure to clean up? And
Yes. Anyway,
so yeah, there's just this push and pull of trying to love them a lot, but also what's healthy for their emotions and all that as well.
Yes. Oh, like so much of what you guys said, I'm like, yes, I know. Like, so, you know, our kids were 1 and 3 when I started learning about the Enneagram. And what I noticed a lot for myself, and a lot of you guys have been saying this, is the disruption of peace is felt physically. So when babies would cry or toddlers would whine or adolescents would, you know, demand, all of those things were really hard and taxing on me as a mom. And that's where a lot of the accommodation would come in. It's, or really, I would love to hear this, if this is true for you guys. I would try, and I'd still do this, I'm trying to constantly predict what could happen with whatever scenario it is, whether I'm going to tell them they need to go brush their teeth and get ready for bed or do homework or just life circumstances. We've got to go in 5 minutes, whatever it is. I'm trying to predict how they'll respond based on them and how I know them, and trying to create the atmosphere just right so that it will go smoother than if I don't predict and like try to plan accordingly. Do you guys do this?
Absolutely. Yes. I think a lot of my a lot of my parenting is trying to predict bad situations and prevent those things from happening. My two oldest, we've homeschooled up until now, and my two oldest are going to go to private school next year. And so a lot of my, I'm going through a lot of emotions of the change that's happening in our family. And so my daughter says to me yesterday, "Mom, you're really a downer about like all the things that are going to happen at school." Like I'll say, well, if this happens at school next year, then how are you going to be prepared for that? You know, I'm just, and she's like, "Mom," she's just so excited about going to school. And I'm afraid of the bad parts that are going to happen. There's hard things that are going to come with it. And I'm trying to predict those things and protect them from that, because I know if it's hard for them, it's going to be hard for me.
Yeah.
Like internally, it's a struggle. And so after she called me out on that yesterday, I let myself process it for a little bit. And then I gave her a hug and I started crying. And I said, "I'm just sad." I'm just really sad. And I won't have control. I won't be able to control the situation as much as I've been able to thus far. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, like kind of talking about this, because it's, you can kind of hear that six part of us, you know, like the type six, like I'm using the six part of my heart to plan and predict, but it has to do with relationships and connection and peace and harmony, right? And preventing the conflict or the tension or people being upset or hurt or not mattering. And so, but it's combining those two types together ultimately for the type nine's core motivations. Let me tell you one quick funny story, and I would love to hear Kristen and Amanda, if you have, you know, if you've done similar things. So when my kids were about 3 and 1, you know, we lived in St. Louis at the time, and in the winter, you have cabin fever, right? Like, especially with little kiddos, you're like, "I've just got to go somewhere." And we lived in a small apartment. So I went to the McDonald's Playland, you know, thinking, okay, this will be great for Nate. You know, he'll have a little Playland and we'll, you know, run a little bit and have some fun, and we'll eat there. So when I got there, I pulled up and I thought, okay, wait, if I go inside with a 3 and a 1-year-old, how am I going to order and do all these things by myself and keep them happy and, you know, keep me sane? So I came up with this idea. It's like, oh, I'm going to go through the drive-thru and I'm going to order, because this is way before, like, you can pick it up, you know, on the shelf nowadays, but I'm going to go through the drive-thru and I'm going to order. And when I get to the window, I'm going to say, "Hey, I'm coming inside. Can you put this on the counter?" So I did that. And so then I went in and I was able to put Libby in her high chair that would roll around. So I rolled her around and had Nate hold on while I got the food. And I was like, this was great. It was like this really inventive, smart way to keep peace, right? But I'm constantly thinking that way because I don't want to have to deal with the whining, the upset, the crying. And like, so like what you were saying, Amanda, like your son doing Rubik's Cube, that is really hard for us to watch our kids, whether suffer legitimately or like you really don't have to be upset, but just being in the room experiencing that physically is super hard. So anyway, tell me, have you guys experienced or do you have similar stories?
I was just going to say, I know that when I say go brush your teeth to one of my children, that it's going to have to happen like 10 times, even though we've been doing this for like 10 years now. But my thing is, I was a teacher and I did not want any downtime for my kids, because if there's downtime, then they're going to start. And they were emotionally disabled kids, that they start fussing and fighting. And so I had to always have something for them to do at all times. And so with my children, I get kind of anxious, especially when they're little. Like, we have screen time, a certain amount of time, we have naps, we have dinner, but what about the time in between? What are they going to do? And I have, you know, like now it's okay, we can kind of relax. They read books and they can play soccer, you know, whatever. But back then I felt like I had to have them doing something. I signed up my 3-year-old for basketball. That was a mistake, but like to have him doing something so that there's not downtime that might cause me some emotional, like some discomfort, and especially with siblings. And I feel like as a parent, I give them more time with the TV than I really want to.
But me that too.
That is the best time. It's like, even especially when we're all watching a show together, like, can we watch a show together? And I'm like, yes, we're together and we're not fighting and we're enjoying the same thing. And so I do have major mom guilt about the amount of screen time.
Oh, absolutely. 100% on the TV. It's like, yeah, but it's working really great. We're all happy right now. Or I can actually go, you know, cook, or I can clean, or I can do whatever needs to happen. And they're happy. They're fine, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? You know,
absolutely.
Oh, so true. Kristen, what about you?
Oh, it is hard to balance that screen time, isn't it? But I was kind of thinking or connecting when Amanda was talking about the sibling fighting and things. And I think that I, of course, when they are fighting, it's a big stress to me. And, you know, you can feel it in your body, and you, I either yell and try to stop it or, you know, scold them really, yell with my voice a lot, but, you know, yelling for me. And I think I realized probably through the Enneagram and realizing just the way that I naturally see things that, I was probably trying to stop things and control them more than I should, and that I should really let, especially the kids, when they're dealing with something together, that it's really healthier for them to work it out together and when they can, and to an extent. But so I try to like do a little bit better at letting them be loud, do their thing, figure it out. And sometimes I might need to send them out. That's fine. But I have noise canceling little ear things that try to use more, that just didn't feel right in my ear, so I don't use them as much as I thought I would. But just to kind of keep that noise level down, and makes me a little bit more calm and happy while everyone else might not be.
Right. So my kids are 25, almost 26 and 23. And so that just kind of gives you guys a time reference. This is way before, so when they were toddlers and stuff, way before like noise canceling earbuds. I would have loved that, because you can still hear, you know, like the things around you, but it just kind of, at least for me as a type 9 mom, it just takes the edge off. But back in the day, because we didn't have that, I would take, you know, those wax earplugs for like swimming. I would take those, and I'd make them really small and thin, you know, and just put them where I could still hear enough, but to take the edge off, because I knew that I was over parenting, trying to get them to be, again, peaceful accommodators, little angels, like, let's all be quiet and like keep our voices down, you know, because that's what I wanted. That's what I liked. So if I would put those in, especially like in the car, it would allow them to be them in a healthy way, right? I mean, obviously they're doing something that's mean or destructive or whatever. Obviously we have to jump in and parent. But if they're just being kids, it's like, I kind of didn't want them to just be kids because it was so loud and so hard to like contain that energy. And so that's what I would do. Have you guys ever done anything similar or like couldn't take the noise? Like I remember Jeff would wrestle with the kids, you know, and play on the floor. And I'm visually looking at this going, this is wonderful. This is beautiful. You know, my husband's playing with the kids, but everything else in me was like, please stop. Like, I can't do this. This is too loud. This is too much energy. So I literally would let Jeff know, like, hey, I'm going to go in the other room and like take a break or just you guys have fun. But I know that I'm going to try to stop you all when I shouldn't. I don't have to. But I'm going to go take care of myself. So, yeah. So basically, have you guys tried any of those kinds of things or felt that when good things are happening, but your body feels otherwise?
I have my room. I go to my room and shut the door. And yeah, because I also feel that stress. And when you mentioned babies, like I refuse to work at my nursery at church. And like I have PTSD or something because I can't be there with babies crying that I can't fix or even don't even want to fix. But and so I feel bad that they're like, well, we don't want people in there who don't really want to be in there. I'm like, okay, I'll do 4-year-olds. I'll do 5-year-olds, but not babies.
Yes.
Not babies.
Yes, absolutely. Mandy or Kristen, what about you guys? Do you do anything to kind of help curb the intensity of, well, actually, Kristen, you said you put the earbuds in, but do you guys do anything else to kind of curb what's going on, whether removing yourself or doing something else?
Could use some improvement probably because I find myself sometimes in like that wrestling scenario or when dad's having a really good time with the kids, which he is very good at. But it gets very loud and sudden noises and you're like, whoa. And I can kind of feel myself doing that kind of like passive aggressive, like, okay, hey, it's getting a little loud in here or something.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
It's not necessary.
And it's hard because it's like, you know, and there's times where, you know, we can't get away and so there's times where we can endure it a little bit. And there's other times like we're really struggling and we have to just ask like, hey, this isn't the time for me. Can you guys kind of keep it down? We can't just not attune to our own needs and stuff. Mandy, what about you? Have you done anything similar?
Well, I mean, the little years were very difficult for me. I would say just all of the chaos of having small children was very hard. And like there was a time when we had mom's group from our church that we would rotate hosting the moms and young kids to come to your house. And the week that I was supposed to host, everyone RSVP'd. So it was going to be like 12 adults and 20 to 30 kids. And I couldn't sleep the night before. At 4 a.m, I emailed everyone and said, I'm not feeling so well. Sorry, everybody. Like, so they all ended up doing something at the local library or something. But I was so, just even envisioning all of the people and the small children in my house, I was like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I mean, it was just overwhelming. And my house tends to be more quiet because I don't like loud. And so when I go visit someone else, their house can be super loud and kids are more chaotic. And I'm just thinking, how do you live like this? Like, what is going on here? And then I go home and I'm like, everybody be quiet now. Let's go read in our rooms. You know,
so. Right. Oh my gosh. So Jeff, you know, was a pastor for about 20 years and he loved small groups. Like that was his forte. And he wanted small groups every week. And I was this every week I was a wreck. I mean, it was, and then one day, so our church was 1 mile away. So it was great. And then, so then they had youth group the same night as our small group. And the youth group, there were some volunteers that had kids. So they had to have childcare there. So I capitalized on that. So I had all the parents take their kiddos there because we were already paying these caregivers there. And then they would just drive 1 mile and we could all enjoy, you know, the adult conversations. I mean, it was like this beautiful thing, but I'm the same way. It's like so much energy. Or like, what if parents aren't watching their kids? Like, is a dog gonna like jump on a kid, or are they gonna like spill something? You know, you're just envisioning all of this chaos and it's just too much. Y'all can hear it in me. It's like, I can't even go there. Like you were saying, Amanda's like PTSD. It's like, no, I can't do it again. But here's one thing, because I know my kids are much older. And I'd love to hear for some of you, because actually your kids are like in this teenage year. So I'd love to hear, because I bet you're kind of like right in the middle of this. So it's hard when they were little, but as they get older, it becomes a new hard, because they are in that stage of pushing back or asking great questions or disagreeing, but rightfully so, like having their own opinions or thoughts or stance on something. And you know, with my husband being a type six, he was perfectly fine carrying on conversations that were, let's say, more debates than arguments. Oh my word, hate that, you know, because like everything in me is like, this is on the precipice of conflict and like disruption. But just even the feeling of the back and forth just feels so horrible. But I'm sitting there going, again, it's kind of like him wrestling with them on the floor. Like I'm going, there's nothing wrong with this right now, but everything in me can't take it. And so then I just have to, you know, let them know like, hey, you all have fun with this conversation. I'm going to the room. Or if I can't leave the situation, hey, can we like do some other conversation? This just is not going to work for me right now. And of course they all know me well enough. They know why this is a thing. And then sometimes I try to sit and like endure it. But are you guys at that stage now with your kids, some of them being a little older and kind of expressing themselves now? And like, how do you deal with that, at least what it feels like as a nine, as tension and conflict?
If I see the conflict happening and hear maybe one of my kids say something to my husband that I know is not going to go over well, that's when I start to feel that like, oh my gosh, why is this happening? I hate this. I see the, like the tension is starting to grow in the room. And I think sometimes I make it like it's this huge thing.
Yeah.
And it's for everybody else. It's not as big a deal as I make it, but because it feels so strong. I feel so strongly about the tension in the room and that somebody's hurt. Like I can tell everybody's feelings. I look around. I'm like, oh man, he's hurt. She's upset. And that's where that I want to fix it comes in, because I hate it so much. But I am learning that it's not my job to make everyone happy and to fix the problem. I need to let this stew or whatever, and then give them an opportunity to reconcile and before I'm brought into the situation. So,
yeah. Kristen, what about you?
Well, our oldest is 11, so I have a feeling we have a lot more of this kind of thing coming. of course, there still has been times where, you know, you just see a situation and don't agree or don't think things should be going that way. Or, you know, I think the Enneagram has helped a lot to just like already go in with like, oh yeah, they're not thinking the way I do. My husband's not going to do things the way I would. And so just like letting some of that go is probably a good thing, but it is hard. And, you know, just feeling that conflict and tension is pretty tricky for us, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Amanda, so what about you? Because your kids are, I think, a little older, like older teenage years, right? Or some of them?
I have a almost 15 and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. Okay. However, my 14-year-old being a nine or just his personality, like we don't have conflict very much at all. The most conflict we have is when he's mad that I'm not disciplining the youngest the way he thinks I should.
Sure.
Mom, take away screen time. You know, and I'm like, I wouldn't have taken away your screen time. I should have. You know, but so that's when really most of our conflict in, is that. But besides that, he, and I kind of worry a little bit in the future, like, is he going to be able to stand up for himself? Is he going to be able to speak up for himself? Because he does kind of like, it's fine, we'll just do it. You know, like his dad wants him to go work out or go hit the baseball, do things that he doesn't want to do. He's in soccer now. And, you know, like, you don't have to go if you don't want to go. And I have to keep saying, like, you can tell dad, I don't want to do that. You don't have to do that. But you don't want to hurt dad's feelings. Or you could say, dad, let's play, kick the soccer ball instead. You know, and I'm trying to coach him a little bit on how to say what he wants instead of just going along. I mean, his times, and he wants to preserve people's feelings. But also, yeah, I mean, we care about what you say. We want to know what you think. And my daughter doesn't. I mean, she's not yet in a place where she's being difficult. Thankfully, she's very open with me, and you're my best friend, and I, you know, all this. And so that makes it harder for me to, and you know, be enforcing rules on her. You know, like I said, she understands. I explain, like, no, you can't have social media. This is why. And then she's like, okay, well, you're right. Then I don't want social media if it's going to be like that.
Like, yeah. Hey, yeah, you're kind of in the eye of the storm, right? Like,
right. It's not going to be the same. I know. And she's sixth grade, and but I know it's coming. But so far, they're very mature too. My two older ones are very mature. So that's been helpful. And my, like I said, the third is my more difficult trying to reason with child. So
yeah. Cause I think, you know, so, you know, with my kids kind of going through all that, and they're both, one's a six and one's a two. So they're both compliant types. But what I've noticed within myself as a parent is as they continue to become the truest versions of themselves and have their opinions and the direction of life they want to go, if it doesn't adhere to maybe my view or my husband and I's, you know, marriage view, you know, they're kind of going off doing their own thing, you know, that can in itself create tension or conflict, or, you know, like, our daughter's married. So then, like, you know, navigating, you know, the in-laws time with my, you know, with the kids and the grandkid versus, you know, so there's all these new dynamics as your kids even get older. And so as a nine, it's like, I'm seeing how there's kind of this evolution of the tension that I feel internally. It's just different stages. And so, like, even though we have a great relationship with our kids, you know, if they want to go do something that's totally different than what we would normally do, or they have a different, let's say, political viewpoint or religious viewpoint, then, you know, there's those kind of conversations, and those can be beautiful and rich. But I think as a nine, it's really hard, you know, because it's like, can't we just all, like, believe the same thing? Like, just be fine. But enabling, and I think that's kind of what you were saying earlier, is like having them have their own voice and their own view, and allowing them to flourish as themselves doesn't mean that there is discord or disruption in our connection as a family. Like, we can still be close and be very different. And I think for a type nine parent, that's really a hard concept to embrace and to feel comfortable with. Two last things. So I want to bring up one more struggle, and I'm going to be very vulnerable. But then I want to talk about how the Enneagram has been so helpful for you guys in your parenting journey. Okay. So the last topic I want to talk about is type nines, like, kind of the hidden struggle we have is that we basically don't want to be bothered. We don't tell anyone this. We don't even want them to know that this is a real thing, but we just don't want to be bothered. So I'm constantly trying to, again, predict things, you know, so that I am not bothered with discord or tension or conflict, or just basically, I just want to just chill and be at peace and harmony, and like, everything's fine. So when things come up that disrupt any of that, it's like, ugh, internally, I feel like frustrated. But I don't want people to know that, because I don't want them to think that I'm saying they don't matter, or that I don't want to be bothered by you. Like, you, your presence doesn't matter, or it's too much. You're too much. So I keep that kind of hidden. But, you know, like when the kids would cry or whine or need something, there's this initial hit in my gut of, oh, okay, I have to do something. And then I feel really like this shame or guilt as a mom, like, well, that's mean. Like, you should want to be needed, or you should be want to be wanted. And so I have this internal tension within myself of, I do want to love and nurture my kids, and I just kind of want to be left alone and have peace and harmony. Do you guys experience this too?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So I see heads nodding. So Amanda, you start. How do you experience this?
I like, especially in the spring, when my kids get home from school, they can have their screen time. And I go and get maybe a glass of wine and a book and sit on the porch, and I'm enjoying it. And then my sweet daughter says, oh, do you want me to read with you on the porch? And I'm like, of course I do. Come sit with me and read. And then she talks. And so there's that pull of like, I love that she wants to do that. So I have to do that. And I'm going to do that. But by the end of the day at 10:30, hey, mom comes into the room and I'm like, okay, it's bedtime. You just got to go to bed. Everybody just go to bed. And I'm at the end of my rope. Everybody get out of my way. And so, yeah, by the end of the day, I'm very short tempered, I think. And like, now stop bothering me and go to your beds. And I don't want to hear from you again until the morning, because this is my time. I got this time when you're asleep. I know nobody's going to bother me. And I will not go to sleep until my people are asleep and I've had time by myself.
Yep.
Nobody bother me. And then I can go to sleep. And sometimes that's very late at night. My husband does not understand why I'll stay up so late. I'm like, I just want to be able to stop. Nobody bother me in my own house.
Yes. And it gets more tricky as they get older, because then they stay up later. It's like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
Mandy, what about you?
Oh, yeah. So I think this would be one of my hardest things for me, is people coming to me with anything. Just questions of, what are we having for dinner? What are we doing today? What are we doing tomorrow? Then my girls like fighting and coming to me and telling me, you know, why one of them's right and the other one's wrong. And it's the emotional energy. And I recently apologized to my husband, because I realized that I do this in a lot of relationships. It's this withdrawal, like this emotional withdrawal, because the 5 is afraid of catastrophic depletion, but I think the 9, like, we have only so much emotional energy, and we're afraid of someone taking all of it. Like, I only have so much to give, and if you ask too much of me, I will disintegrate or something. So I apologized to my husband, because I said, I don't want to withdraw from you. Like, if of all the people in the world that I should withdraw from, I don't want my husband to be the one that I close myself off, or I just shut down, like just kind of go into a numb place. And so I'm learning that, but I also have to have boundaries, because I don't have an endless amount of emotional energy for people. So, and that's, I think knowing yourself is so important. And the Enneagram really helps with that so much. Maybe that's why the 9s like the Enneagram so much, because it gives us language for understanding, like, why do I do this? Like, why do I shut down? When I really don't want to, I feel guilty if I do that. I feel like I'm not there for my people when they want me to be there.
I totally feel that. Like, there's just so much internal shame or guilt. It could be both of, I so desperately want to be there for you guys. I want to give you what my core longing is, which is your presence matters. Like, I want them to feel their presence matters. And I try so hard to give that to everyone and to know them well. And yet I also expend myself to the point where I just like, I can't even go any further. But then it's like, the fear is, but what if I don't take the next step to show them that their presence matters? Are they going to believe that their presence doesn't matter? Like, are they going to feel that I don't think they're important or special? And so I keep kind of pushing myself to, quote unquote, be the best mom, of course, through the lens of a nine, and listen one more time or sit with them one more time. And I think what happens is I negate what I need and how to take care of myself in the fear that they would think that I'm saying their presence doesn't matter, or they're not important enough for me in that moment. And that is such a strong driver for me as a mom. Kristen, what about you?
Well, listening to you guys, I actually think I don't connect as much with that one. And it may be, I know that I have a strong social subtype. So I don't really get super drained, or I don't feel a lot of what you guys are talking about. I'm sure there are times, and night times are of course harder, and like, let's just go to bed. And I do the stay up late by myself and for hours, and longer than I ever thought I would be before I had kids. So I do get some energy back that way, but I think I don't recognize it as much as it sounds like you guys might when it's happening, or, you know, I don't feel that depletion or that, like, I just need time away. And that just might be that social drive or whatever.
Can you pass some of that over here?
I'm self-prez, so I'm definitely more introverted, and just, I'm totally fine, like, not talking to people for long periods of time, which my social daughter cannot understand at all. If I'm by myself, she's like, "Are you alone? Are you lonely? Do you feel lonely?" I'm like, "No, never. I never feel alone, like, ever." She just doesn't understand that at all.
That's funny. Amanda, what are you, self-prez, social, or one-to-one? You're self-prez? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm the one-to-one. And so I'm highly fixated on merging, especially with like Jeff. And so it's exhausting. And so there's this sense of, I just need my own time and space. Okay, so let's dive into this, wrapping this all up. I'd love to hear, how has the Enneagram helped you as a type nine parent become a healthier version of yourself and enjoy yourself and to know that your presence matters and that you're so important. How has the Enneagram helped you, and where have you seen it help you the most?
I'll start. Pursuing my coaching, Enneagram coach certificate, what I didn't know was such a growth for me as a nine. As I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, this is what I'm doing. I found my passion. I forgot I'm not just loving my kids and driving them everywhere in 100% mom. I had a passion before I had kids, and I forgot what it was. And I rediscovered it by reading some books that were interesting to me. And I'm like, gosh, I love this so much. I want to do more of this. And so just finding my passion was just so great. And I work very hard at it, and I love it. And my husband sadly does not like his job. And I'm like, I really love what I'm doing. I find it so interesting. I wish you could find something you love so much. But I think it's really, I love that my kids are seeing me pursuing a passion and loving something besides them. They know I love them, and I still spend 90% of my time thinking of them and doing things for them. But it's very healthy. I feel like that they see me pursuing my interests and passions. And even just like, my husband loves the cold and I like the hot. He loves hiking and going on vacations that are skiing and work, what I consider work. Skiing's hard. Just getting dressed is hard to get skiing. But he was deployed. And so I did a lot of things that I wanted to do that he would not have wanted to do, including taking my kids to Hilton Head and just sitting on the beach in the morning, reading by myself for hours. And it was the most amazing thing. And I'm like, I can say, why don't we go to the beach instead of skiing this year, or stand up for what I want for my vacation, you know, or make that more known. And because that's healthy, and that's, I want my kids to see me doing that as well, modeling that instead of, okay, whatever y'all want to do, we'll just do what y'all want to do.
Yeah.
So that's one that's way great. That I've definitely grown and seen and pursued that, knowing that that's me growing. I can keep moving forward with this, using my three energy to be, I'm afraid of failure. I really am. Mm-hmm. But I also have this three path that I can go to and keep working hard, and I'm not going to fail. I'm not going to fail. I tell myself I can keep doing this, and I haven't failed because I've been learning and growing. And people are like, gosh, you really, I have seen such growth in you. And I'm like, well, then that, there's no failure if that's what's happening here.
I love that. Yep. Self-growth, knowing ourselves, going with our passions while we still, you know, are loving others in the moment, you know, and accommodating when necessary and when it's healthy, but also asserting ourselves is, you know, such a beautiful thing. Mandy, what about you? How's the Enneagram really helped you in being a mom?
Well, it's helped me understand myself so much better. And it's given me voice in some ways. I think there's been lots of things that have helped me with that. And also to know that when there's tension in relationships, or if I'm disciplining my kids and actually meaning what I say and following through, that it's not hurting the relationship. It's healthy, and it feels contrary to what I think, you know, it feels like there's conflict, but there it's not. And so it's helped me with just kind of being firm with my kids instead of being, you know, kind of like, I don't know, maybe I should discipline you. I don't know. So it's helped me in that way. And I've learned, like, my favorite name of God is the God who sees. And the Hagar story, where she says, you saw me, he sees me. And so I think I love that God sees me no matter what, when I feel like nobody else does. And I also bring that to others in relationship, especially like quiet people or people on the margins. I move toward them and I want them to know, like, I see you. And that's part of like a gift from God, that he put that on my heart to see people like he sees me. And I do that with my kids. You know, I see them. Like you said, we study our kids from the time they're little. So just seeing like each of them individually and what they're struggling with, or what drives them, what their passions are. So it's helped me in a lot of ways. Those are just a few.
Yeah. Kristen, what about you?
I think understanding myself through the Enneagram and then understanding how different others can be, including my kids. And so I brought that into the lens of not really necessarily knowing what number they may be, but having some ideas and watching how different some of them are. And it really does help just to go into that with that mind frame of, okay, you are different. You could be looking at it this way, and with kids or anyone. And it really just does help to calm things down, which of course I like. and I think helped me to maybe be more confident in my communication also. Like, yeah, I can go ahead and say something, and I should. And so I've realized that, like, instead of holding back, like, some people will appreciate that I'm going to say this, or that I want, they might have a different opinion. And then that it's good for me to go ahead and say things that are on my mind. So things to grow in, but also that I've been working on, I think. And
No, that's great. Yeah. I think the, you know, like for me, like you guys have said, so many things helping. I find the Enneagram fascinating because it's like a cheat sheet for us nines to really understand others. Cause like we're always trying to understand others and their point of view, but it's like just such a quicker way of doing it. It's like a cheat sheet. But more than that, understanding myself, like you guys said, because you know, before the Enneagram, I was like, I don't know what I want. You know, I'll just go along with whatever you say. Fine. And thinking that it's loving. And to a degree that is, you know, right. Some accommodation is healthy and loving, but not knowing myself, not asserting myself, not developing myself and my passions and my gifts, that's not loving to myself or to others. And it's not God honoring. So by really studying who God created me to be, and to then take that next step, even if it's a little step, into asserting myself, my passions, my desires, has been so hard, but so rewarding at the same time. Well, guys, thank you so much for just being open and honest and vulnerable. And I know that so many other parents are going to really enjoy this conversation, because if they're not a type nine, they're going to be like really surprised and wowed. Like, really, this is how you guys like think of parenting. This is how you experience it. And hopefully they'll have compassion for us, but also be like excited about the gifts that we bring. But for those type nine parents out there, they're going to feel so seen, understood, and validated. So I just really appreciate you guys spending the time to do a little mini cohort as an example of what's to come with our cohorts for, at least to begin with, Enneagram for Moms cohorts coming up here really soon. So thank you guys so much for being with us, or being with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. I am just so blessed to have these type nine moms with me, especially today, being a type nine myself, and just having then be authentic and vulnerable about their experiences. I hope that you can see how being a part of a mini cohort could be so enriching to you, to feel validated, to feel seen, known, heard as a parent. So that is really what it's all about. Now, we'll be taking you through a guided series so that you can explore and learn more about your strengths and weaknesses and growth path as a parent, as a mom in the cohorts. But this is just to give you a glimpse of what it's going to be like. And we're really excited for them to start. So if you are interested in being a part of a community like this, we are opening registration for Enneagram for Moms cohorts on May 6th. So it's just around the corner. So if that is something that you're interested in, be sure to write down the website, yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. Now, there are only 25 spaces per group. We'll have one in the daytime, one in the evening. So don't miss out in grabbing your spot. Again, it opens on May 6th to the 13th. So this would be a great Mother's Day gift for anyone, for yourself or for someone else. And I'm really excited because our newest book, Enneagram for Moms, is coming out July 9th. So we've really paired this up to kind of come out and be released at the same time. Now, the cohorts will start on June 10th, and the book will come out in July. So again, grab your seat today. Grab one for your mom, your sister, your wife, your daughter, whoever is an enthusiast of the Enneagram and a mom. They definitely want to be a part of these cohorts. They're going to have such rich, life-giving relationships from this cohort. Okay, so yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. Now, next week, we're going to have another mini cohort with type one moms. And then the following weeks, we'll go type two, three, and so on and so forth. So join us next week as we experience the same thing, but from the type one mom's perspective. Can't wait for you to be with us then. See ya.